In many ways, it is the best of times and the worst of times for the field of psychiatry. New discoveries in neuroscience are leading us to a better understanding of several major disorders such as schizophrenia and bipolar. At the same time, psychiatry is being challenged from several quarters and is the subject of great controversy. And mental illness itself continues to be quite misunderstood and even stigmatized. Well, here with a unique perspective on all of this is Dr. Ronald Pies. Dr. Pies is Editor-in-Chief Emeritus of the Psychiatric Times and a professor in the psychiatry departments of Upstate Medical University and Tufts University School of Medicine. Dr. Pies is an author, most recently of a collection of essays drawn from the Psychiatric Times entitled Psychiatry on the Edge, and also of a novel, The Director of Minor Tragedies. He's also been involved with a collection of essays, of short stories, poetry, and many, many other aspects of fiction. So I'm going to welcome you, Dr. Pies. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you very much, Linda.
So psychiatry, let's start with that, because I think psychiatry, as you said, you've actually said, is the best and the worst of times,
yes.
As Shakespeare said. I mean, it's under the gun right now, and psychiatrists are bearing the brunt of some of this. Tell us about that.
Well, Linda, I think psychiatry is facing a lot of skepticism right now from the general public and even from many within the profession. It's ironic because we are learning more and more about the causes of mental illnesses. Not a great term. Sometimes I use the term psychiatric disease in preference to the term mental illness. So we're learning a lot about these illnesses. We are developing more effective treatments, but at the same time, many in the public continue to misunderstand what mental illness is. There is a lot of animosity directed sometimes at the people who treat patients with mental illness, so that psychiatrists and psychologists and others themselves may sometimes be stigmatized. And I think that this is a great challenge for public education for us.
And there's also been on tremendous pressure financially, I would think, for psychiatrists, where there's a lot of pressure to shorten the courses of therapy, to give more medications and less kind of traditional treatment options. That must play a tremendous role in creating a lot of pressure and frustration for psychiatrists.
Well, that's true. Certainly there is a lot of pressure to reduce the amount of psychotherapy that psychiatrists traditionally have done, and to pay people at lower wages to do that kind of work. So there is that pressure, and unfortunately there has been a decline in the amount of psychotherapy that's delivered by psychiatrists, though we are still doing it, I'm happy to say. One problem really is with the whole healthcare system, if system isn't too kind a word, it's really something of a non-system, so that very few people with serious mental disorders even have access to the best treatments available.
When we've seen recently some of the more violent acts, for example, of young men most commonly,
yes,
out there and getting so much attention and the whole gun control debate,
yes,
raging on, and yet a lot of people say, well, at the core of all of this is a problem with mental illness and access,
right,
to mental health.
Right. Well, that's a very controversial area and gets into all kinds of issues regarding the connection between psychiatric illness and violence, the issue of regulating firearms, and so on. So briefly, I'll just say this. There is actually very little that connects mental illness with violence, or to put it another way, most violent acts are not committed by folks who have psychiatric disorders, and most people with psychiatric disorders are not violent. It's actually a very, very small percentage. Unfortunately, when you get something like a mass shooting, the first thing people want to do is control folks who have psychiatric disorders. Well, we certainly need to get better access for those individuals to mental health care, that's for sure. But actually, it's a very, very small percentage of people who have mental disorders that are ever involved in violent acts. More commonly, they are the victims of violent acts.
So what do you believe should prevail in terms of the treatment of mental illness? I mean, what's your approach, and what are we lacking now in this country, and what should we be aiming toward?
Right. Well, the larger problem, of course, is with healthcare in this country in general. We just don't have the kind of system that other countries have that allow people relatively easy access and affordable access to healthcare in general. And a mental health care is really just a subset of that problem. So, for example, people who have serious depression, there's a lot of hype, I think, in the media about over-medication, epidemic of antidepressant use, and so on. Well, actually, only a very small percentage of folks who have serious clinical depression ever get access to health care of any kind, ever get access to specialists in mental health. Most of those people either go untreated or undiagnosed. So that's the first thing. In terms of a general approach or philosophy to the treatment of mental illness, my basic approach is what has been called a biopsychosocial approach. That was Dr. George Engel's model, and I can talk more about what that means later if you're interested.
Well, it sounds like it's a more of a humanistic approach, and maybe looking at many multiplicity of factors that play a role in bringing someone to that place.
That's right. And I was fortunate to have done my residency here at Upstate and had really, I think, an excellent sort of biopsychosocial humanistic background. My professors, my teachers always taught that you look at not just biological, but also psychological, social, cultural roots of emotional and other problems. And I think the treatment naturally flows from that model. There is a myth around that you'll see often in the press that psychiatrists believe that a quote, chemical imbalance causes all mental illnesses, and that's really not true. Certainly, there are biochemical factors that contribute, but most responsible psychiatrists will tell you that these disorders are very complex conditions that arise from genetic, biochemical, psychological, social, even cultural factors.
So it's really a combination of all those things.
It is.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with psychiatrist and author Dr. Ronald Pies, and we're talking about the current state of psychiatry today and also the approach to mental illness and the stigmas around it. In the book that you just put together, that Psychiatry on the Edge, you address the subject of grief and depression and this whole concept of a bereavement controversy.
Yes.
Can you say a little bit about that?
Yes, it's a complicated issue, but to put it briefly, there is a lot of confusion over the terms grief and depression. And recently, the controversy flared up when the new Diagnostic and Treatment Manual, DSM-5, eliminated something called the bereavement exclusion, which was in the earlier editions. That principle was designed to avoid overdiagnosing depression in folks who had just lost a loved one.
That makes sense.
It makes sense. What didn't make sense was the notion that simply because someone has lost a loved one and naturally would be grieving, that they couldn't also develop a major depressive episode. And unfortunately, they can. In fact, recent bereavement is a very common precipitant of a major depressive episode. The old manual basically said, no, the person can have all the signs and symptoms of a major depressive episode, but if it's within a few weeks of a recent loss, we're not going to count that as major depression.
So what you're really saying, I think, though, that is that, I mean, how does one really tease out then,
right,
with DSM aside,
right,
how does one tease out what is normal bereavement versus a clinical depression?
Right. Great question. And basically, bereavement we define in the literature as the loss itself, the death of a loved one or significant other. Normally, grief will follow from that, along with rituals of mourning. Grief differs in many, many ways from major depression.
How?
In grief, generally, the person experiences a mixture of painful memories, but also pleasant memories of the person who has been lost. In grief, the bereaved person is, generally speaking, able to function fairly well. Self-esteem is preserved. The person is consoled by friends, relatives, and family. In major depression, generally speaking, the person is relatively unable to function, often becomes suicidal, generally is inconsolable, often has trouble with appetite, sleeping, and even the ability to think clearly. And generally speaking, in major depression, the person has very low self-esteem, sometimes to the point of self-loathing or self-hatred, and may act in a way that injures himself or herself or even commit suicide. That's all very different, really, than what we call ordinary grief.
And it's discernible to most psychiatrists, the distinction, or even to many health professionals, I would
think. Yes, and even to the average person. Otherwise, our offices would be filled with millions of people who had just lost a loved one. Most people know the difference intuitively.
In the little bit of time we have left, I don't want to run out of time. You've been writing a lot of fiction lately, and you just wrote a novel. What inspires you? How does your life as a psychiatrist inform your writing?
Well, I like to say that we bring order out of disorder in the field of medicine, and in a sense, I think writing works the same way for me. I look at the chaos in the world and think about ways that I can bring some order to that, and I think my writing is one way of doing that.
In terms of your topics and your themes, how does that come forward?
Well, the novel deals with a troubled family, to put it simply, a troubled marriage, a troubled child in the family. And those are things that, of course, I've dealt with most of my life as a professional.
So, and are you able to then have some resolution as a result? I mean, in the sense that now you're crafting the life?
Yes, I think that literature allows us to bring some order to the disorder that we find in the world and sometimes even problems in our own life.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing all of this with us today. Obviously, you have you are not just a psychiatrist, not that it's just, but you have, it's almost like you're a philosopher, ethicist, writer, artist, all of that. And we're very honored that you had the time to spend with us today. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me.
My guest has been Dr. Ronald Pies, a physician, psychiatrist, poet, writer with academic appointments at Tufts University and Upstate.